Okay, good morning. Welcome to our July 25th Regional Board meeting. I'd like to begin with our introductions, item one, and a declaration of quorum. We are meeting in person and via Zoom, and this meeting is being webcast and recorded. For those who have completed a virtual speaker card for this Zoom meeting, you will be on mute and your camera turned off until it is your turn to speak. The host will then unmute and ask you to turn on your camera if you have one. When you are done speaking, you will be placed on mute and your camera turned off. You can remain in the Zoom or exit the meeting at that time. For people who want to listen or watch the meeting, the board's customary webcast is available. I'd now like to ask all our board members to please introduce themselves, and I will start to my right, my far right, with board member Al Lopez.
Good morning. My name is Al Lopez. I'm the former mayor of Corona and also a past board member of Western Municipal Ward District in Rosette County.
And board member Gloria Alvarado.
Good morning, everyone. Gloria Alvarado. I'm a resident of the city of Santa Ana, and I would like to thank the city of Orange for hosting us today.
Thank you. And Letitia Clark, board member Letitia Clark will be here shortly, but I'd now like to go to board member William Rue, who is with us remotely today.
Yes, good morning. I'm Bill Rue, a longtime board member. Pleased to be able to join you by Zoom today. I'm also a council member of the city of Montclair, and I do apologize for not being able to be there in person, but I have an 11:30 meeting with a member of Congress for my professional life, and I'm unable to change that meeting. So thank you for accommodating me via Zoom.
Welcome. Nice to see you remotely. And Vice Chair John Scandura.
Okay. And good morning, everybody, and thank you for participating, whether here in person or remotely. Again, thank you for the City of Orange for hosting us. This is one of my favorite cities in Southern California. I'm from Huntington Beach, but I was also born and raised in the Inland Empire, and so it's a pleasure to serve on this board and serve all of you.
Thank you, Vice Chair Scandura. And I'm Chris Murray. I'm board chair, longtime resident as well of Orange County, and I've now been on the board for about 7 years, and it's my tremendous honor to chair and serve with my colleagues and the staff of our incredible agency and to work with all of our community members. As I mentioned, we have one board member who will be participating remotely, but we do have quorum with a majority of the board members here in person. We want to announce that the board has selected, this is a big announcement, has selected Eric Lindberg as our next executive officer. Welcome, Eric. He's up here on the dais with us.
Thank you, Chair Murray. I'm very excited.
Yeah, we're thrilled to have you. And as you know, our current executive officer, Jane Joy, is about to begin an incredible adventure of retirement and a little more freedom. But we are going to miss you tremendously. It's been such an honor to serve with you, and I know we're all going to say more later, but just wish you so much happiness and all the best.
I'll just offer my thank you as well. It's been a pleasure to be on the board.
And just for everyone's notification, we're changing the order of the agenda and items 3 and 4 to be heard after item 12 to accommodate some scheduling today. So I will move to the public forum. Any person may address the Santa Ana Water Board on any matter within the board's jurisdiction, provided that the matter does not appear elsewhere on the agenda and has not been scheduled to appear on a future agenda and is not otherwise pending before the board. So at this point, I'd like to welcome hearing from the public. At this meeting, any person wishing to speak should have submitted a speaker request for those items listed on today's agenda. You will make your comments at the time the item is being considered. If you wish to speak on an item that is not on the agenda, you may now speak during the public forum, and comments will be limited to 3 minutes. Jessica, do we have any comment cards at this time?
No, we do not.
Okay, great. Then, again, as I mentioned, we'll move items 3 and 4 to be heard after item 12, so I'll move to item 5, our regional board minutes of June 13th, 2025. We'll consider approval of those minutes for the regional board meeting on June 13th. Do I have a request? Do I have anyone?
Madam Chair, this is Bill Rue. I'll make a motion.
Oh, thank you. Moved by Board Member Rue?
Second.
Seconded by Board Member Alvarado. Jessica, would you please call the roll?
Bartender Lopez?
Aye.
Bartender Alvarado?
Aye.
Vice Chair Scandora?
Aye.
Bartender Rue?
Aye.
Chair Chris Nuri?
Aye. And that item passes. Now items, item six of the consent calendar. Forgive me, everybody. I guess I need more coffee. I'm blending my agenda items. All right, marked items below marked with an asterisk are expected to be routine and non-controversial. The board will now be asked to consider these items at one time without discussion. If any interested person, board member, or staff requests an item to be removed from the consent calendar, it will be taken up in the order shown. So I'd now like to ask items 7 through 10. Does anyone, any member of the board?
Madam Chair, I'll make a motion for the consent calendar as presented. Bill Rue.
Thank Second. You. Board Member Rue?
Second.
Second by Board Member Lopez. Jessica, please call the roll.
Bartender Lopez?
Aye.
Bartender Alvarado?
Aye.
Bartender Rue?
Aye.
Vice Chair Scandora?
Aye.
And Chair Nuri?
Aye. And that item passes. So I'll now move to item 11. Item 11 is an action for the board to consider a basin plan amendment to revise the nutrient total maximum daily loads for Lake Elsinore and Canyon Lake. And I'd like to invite Lauren Briggs to present this item. Welcome.
Good morning. My name is Lauren Briggs, and I am a senior environmental scientist at the Santa Ana Water Board. Today, I'll be presenting to the board the proposed amendment to the basin plan to revise the nutrient total maximum daily loads for Lake Elsinore and Canyon Lake in the San Jacinto River watershed. Next slide, please. Here's an outline of the topics I'm going to cover in today's presentation. I will start off with a recap of the presentation given to the board during the February 14th board meeting and the purpose of the proposed project. Following that, I will briefly discuss what total maximum daily loads mean and their regulatory background. I will also provide a description of the project location and water body impairment. I will then talk about the Lake Elsinore and Canyon Lake TMDL Task Force and highlight some of the work they've done to improve the watershed over the last 20 years. I will also go over the technical details of the proposed TMDL revision and highlight some key public comments received on the proposed project. And lastly, staff recommendations to the board. Next slide, please. I would like to start off with the project purpose today. The purpose of this project is to reopen and revise the Lake Elsinore and Canyon Lake nutrient total maximum daily loads. Next slide. Total maximum daily loads, also referred to as TMDLs, represent the maximum amount of a specific pollutant that a water body can receive each day and still meet water quality standards. A TMDL accounts for pollutant concentrations from all sources, including point and non-point sources, as well as a margin of safety. The Clean Water Act, Section 303D, requires states to develop TMDLs for water bodies that are identified as impaired, meaning they do not meet water quality standards. TMDLs serve as a regulatory tool to guide restoration efforts and ensure long-term attainment of those standards. The image on the right is a visual of how a TMDL is calculated. A TMDL includes the sum of wasteload allocations from point sources, such as a wastewater treatment facility or a stormwater discharger, load allocations from non-point sources, such as runoff from landscape or natural open areas, and a margin of safety that accounts for uncertainty about the relationship between the pollutant loads and the quality of the receiving waters. Next slide. This slide shows the TMDL approval process. Before a TMDL is in effect, it must go through a series of approvals. In the first step, the regional board adopts the TMDL. Step two, state board reviews and may approve or revise the TMDL. In step three, the Office of Administrative Law ensures regulatory compliance. And in step four, the US EPA reviews and finalizes the TMDL for Clean Water Act enforcement. Next slide. So the question arises, why are we proposing to revise the Lake Elsinore and Canyon Lake nutrient total maximum daily loads? The main reason is that there has been significant changes in the watershed due to increased residential and commercial development that may have altered nutrient loading patterns since the TMDLs were previously adopted by this board in 2004. Over the last 20 years since the original adoption, new data and information was gathered that warrants a revision of the TMDLs. And although the TMDL, the 2004 TMDLs are being met on a 10-year average, the in-lake numeric targets remain unmet. Next slide. In 2015, the TMDL Task Force submitted a formal petition to Santa Ana Water Board to revise the nutrient TMDLs, citing changes in land use, new water quality regulations, and the availability of updated scientific data. The information provided made it clear that the original 2004 TMDLs were due for reassessment. Based on the strength of the justification and supporting data, the Santa Ana Water Board agreed, and a revision of the nutrient TMDLs is warranted. The TMDL Task Force has since taken the lead in preparing the documentation necessary to support the revision process, including modeling updates, load assessments, and water quality analysis. Between 2018 and 2024, the task force, in collaboration with Santa Ana Water Board staff, led a multi-year effort involving technical updates, extensive public outreach, and external scientific peer review. This ensured transparency, technical accuracy, and stakeholder input at every step of the revision process. Next slide. Now I'm going to briefly recap the history of the watershed. This slide provides an overview of the San Jacinto River watershed, which is part of the Santa Ana region and located in Riverside County. Lake Elsinore and Canyon Lake are both in the San Jacinto River watershed, approximately 60 miles southeast of Los Angeles and 22 miles south of the city of Riverside. The watershed includes several upstream impoundments, including Lake Paris, Mystic Lake, and Lake Hemet, that influence the hydrology and nutrient loading downstream into Canyon Lake and Lake Elsinore. Historically, this region was dominated by agricultural land uses. However, over the past decade, we have seen a notable shift towards more urban and suburban development. Next slide. Lake Elsinore, shown here, is a terminus of the San Jacinto River watershed, which means that water losses within the lake occurs through evaporation and percolation. Lake Elsinore is the largest natural lake in Southern California. Originally, the lake had an elevation of 1,260 feet, a surface area of approximately 6,000 acres, and an average depth of 21.5 feet with a maximum depth of 42 feet at the center of the lake. Because it is a terminal lake, Lake Elsinore is highly sensitive to climatic conditions and exhibits a wide range of water quality conditions. Historically, it has dried up multiple times, most notably in the 19th century and during prolonged droughts in the mid-20th century. Under these historic drought conditions, Santa Ana winds would periodically remove lake bottom sediments that were rich in nutrients and reduce the internal nutrient load. Even today, lake levels fluctuate dramatically, making water quality and management a persistent challenge. Next slide. In the 1980s, Lake Elsinore was modified through the Lake Elsinore Management Project, which constructed a levee to reduce the lake surface area from about 6,000 acres to 3,000 acres to prevent significant evaporative losses, resolve concerns with shoreline variability, flooding, and water quality problems. To help stabilize lake levels, in 2007, the Elsinore Valley Municipal Water District, through an agreement with the City of Lake Elsinore, began adding tertiary treated recycled water to the lake. The Elsinore Valley Municipal Water District adds about 4,700 acre feet of recycled water to the lake per year to help maintain lake levels. If you look at the map on the right, the red boundary line is the Lake Elsinore boundary before the levee was constructed. And if you look at the blue line, this is the current lake boundary following construction of the levee and reduced surface area. Next slide. Lake Elsinore supports several designated beneficial uses under the basin plan, which form the foundation for setting water quality objectives and TMDL targets. Rec 1 refers to water contact recreation activities, such as swimming or wading, which require a high level of water quality due to direct human exposure. Rec 2 includes non-contact water recreation, like boating, kayaking, or shoreline activities. The warm beneficial use is intended to support aquatic species that thrive in warm freshwater environments. This includes both fish and macroinvertebrates. And lastly, wild designates the lake as habitat for various species of wildlife, both aquatic and terrestrial, that rely on the lake ecosystem for survival. Protecting these beneficial uses is central to the goals of the TMDL program. Next slide. Canyon Lake was created in 1928 by damming the San Jacinto River and spans roughly 500 acres and serves multiple hydrologic and recreational functions. The lake is divided into three primary areas: the main lake, East Bay, and the North Ski area, all of which are heavily bordered by a residential community. One of Canyon Lake's most important hydrologic roles is acting as a regulating reservoir, and during wet years, it serves as a critical water source for Lake Elsinore. This connection is managed via the Canyon Lake Dam and is shown in the photo on the top right of this slide. The presence of the dam allows controlled releases of water downstream to help sustain Lake Elsinore water levels, particularly during periods of adequate rainfall. During wet years, water overflows from Canyon Lake is the main source of water for Lake Elsinore. During dry years, when limited to no flow from the San Jacinto River enters Canyon Lake, the flow terminates in Canyon Lake without ever reaching Lake Elsinore. And over the last 20 years, Canyon Lake has only spilled over into Lake Elsinore during about 10 of those years. Next slide. Canyon Lake supports a wide range of beneficial uses designated under the basin plan. These include contact and non-contact water recreation, as well as warm freshwater habitat and wildlife habitat. In addition to ecological and recreational uses, Canyon Lake serves important water supply functions, supporting municipal, agricultural, and groundwater recharge needs. Next slide. Both Canyon Lake and Lake Elsinore have long histories of nutrient-related water quality issues. In 1994, Lake Elsinore was officially listed as an impaired water under the Clean Water Act due to harmful algal blooms and periodic fish kills. A few years later, in 1998, Canyon Lake was added to the impaired waters list for similar reasons. These underlying causes include excessive inputs of nitrogen and phosphorus, largely from watershed runoff, which has led to eutrophication, which is a condition where algae flourish, oxygen is depleted, and aquatic life suffers. The low dissolved oxygen and high algal biomass have caused ecological stress and recreational restrictions in both lakes. In response, the Santa Ana Water Board adopted nutrient TMDLs in 2004. These TMDLs aimed to limit nutrient loadings to protect the lake's beneficial uses. And for reference of what these impairments look like in recent years, the top image on the right was taken in Lake Elsinore in 2022 during an algal bloom event. The bottom image was also taken in Lake Elsinore in 2017 following a fish kill event. Next slide, please. The Lake Elsinore and Canyon Lake TMDL Task Force was established in 2005 to ensure a collaborative and cost-effective approach to implementing nutrient TMDLs. It brings together a diverse group of stakeholders, including cities, water agencies, agricultural operators, and state and federal partners, all working towards a common goal: improving water quality in Lake Elsinore and Canyon Lake. This joint effort enables shared funding, coordinated implementation, and consistent monitoring across jurisdictions. Next slide. The Lake Elsinore and San Jacinto Watershed Authority, or LEJWA, serves as the administrator for the Lake Elsinore and Canyon Lake TMDL Task Force. LEJWA is a joint powers authority entrusted with state and local funds to improve water quality and wildlife habitats in Lake Elsinore, Canyon Lake, and the surrounding watershed. LEJWA also supports planning and the design and implementation of projects to improve water quality. And while the task force stakeholders directly fund TMDL implementation activities, LEJWA works with the stakeholders to secure reliable funding to operate and maintain water quality improvement projects. Next slide. The TMDL task force has implemented several critical remedial actions to address water quality challenges in Lake Elsinore and Canyon Lake. First, the Canyon Lake Alum Program targets nutrient reduction at the source by binding phosphorus, which helps prevent harmful algal blooms. And the image on the top right here reflects liquid alum being applied or sprayed to the lake water in Canyon Lake. In Lake Elsinore, fishery studies assess the ecological balance and guide management strategies to support a healthier aquatic environment. And the bottom image on the right was taken during one of these fish surveys. The task force also performs ongoing monitoring in both lakes to provide essential data on water quality trends, which informs future corrective actions. And finally, all decisions are grounded in the best available science, including modeling, lab analysis, and expert review, supporting an adaptive, results-based approach. Next slide, please. The TMDL regulatory process adopted is shown on this slide. In 2018, the Lake Elsinore and Canyon Lake TMDL Task Force submitted a final draft TMDL technical report to Santa Ana Water Board staff for review and comment. This draft incorporated new monitoring data, updated modeling approaches, and refinements based on years of study. In 2019, the Santa Ana Water Board initiated the California Environmental Quality Act, or CEQA, scoping process. This included a public workshop to engage stakeholders and receive feedback on the scope and direction of the proposed revisions. That same year, the draft documents were subjected to external scientific peer review, ensuring they met regulatory standards and scientific rigor. And this is where we are today. Over the last 6 years, the Lake Elsinore and Canyon Lake TMDL Task Force and Santa Ana Water Board staff have worked collaboratively and diligently on multiple rounds of revisions, continuously refining the TMDLs based on input from stakeholders, technical advisors, and evolving water quality goals. In 2023, Assembly Bill 2108 took effect, requiring outreach in disadvantaged communities that are disproportionately impacted by water quality pollution. Staff have satisfied this outreach requirement by conducting outreach in potentially affected disadvantaged and tribal communities. Staff used the Office of Environmental Health Hazards Assessments CalEnviro screen mapping tool to identify disadvantaged communities and distributed flyers in both English and Spanish within the San Jacinto River watershed. And over the next few slides, I will go over the proposed revisions to the TMDLs. Next slide, please. The TMDLs were revised using a reference watershed model, which reflects real-world variability in loading and hydrology. In other words, the allocations for external nutrient loading to the downstream lakes is representative of a reference or natural watershed condition. Instead of static targets, this model sets dynamic goals that account for long-term trends and natural fluctuations, such as drought cycles. Numeric and narrative objectives are linked to actual observed outcomes in a healthy reference system. This approach would help align TMDL expectations with what's ecologically attainable, given climate and watershed variability. Next slide. When using a reference watershed approach for TMDL development, the characterization of the reference nutrient concentration is the primary driver for the entire TMDL, both serving as the allocation and inputs to the linkage analysis used in estimating in-lake targets. Between 2003 and 2010, the U.S. Forest Service collected 51 grab samples during 10 wet weather events at the Cranston Guard Station for nutrient analysis. This location was selected to be used as a reference monitoring site because the upstream watershed land use is comprised of 97% open space or forest land. Table 3-2, shown on this slide, is the summary statistics from that reference watershed. The median nutrient concentration of this data set is highlighted by the bottom red box. This served as the basis for the allocations in the 2018 draft TMDL that was submitted for peer review. Following peer review, a decision was made to move the allocations to a more conservative value based on the 25th percentile of this data set, which is highlighted in the top red box. The median would then shift as an interim milestone. I would also like to assert that recent US EPA guidance and TMDL development in other locations throughout the US have supported this approach. For example, the Chesapeake Bay Nutrient TMDL and the Connecticut Statewide Lake Nutrient TMDL. Next slide. The table on the slide shows Canyon Lake's phased TMDL allocations by source. Reductions of 60 to 80% are required, especially from urban stormwater, or MS4s, and agricultural sources. Allocations are divided into waste load allocations from point sources like stormwater and confined animal facilities, and load allocations from non-point sources, including agricultural and public lands. And the negative values in this table are for reference watershed retention, which represents natural upstream attenuation. Allocations are assigned to watershed jurisdictions based on their acreage and estimated runoff volume based on current land use conditions. Tables are included in the TMDL technical report that show each individual jurisdiction's allocation for both total phosphorus and total nitrogen. When comparing the external source allocations from the 2004 TMDL with the proposed interim milestone and final allocation, there is a reduction in allowable load in all cases. This transition from phase two milestones to phase three final allocations reflects an adaptive stepwise reduction strategy grounded in long-term watershed modeling. Next slide. This table summarizes the TMDL allocations for Lake Elsinore organized by source and geography. The watershed is divided into the local subwatershed, which is within Lake Elsinore, and upstream sources above Mystic Lake. Again, the negative values in this table highlighted in red represent nutrient retention in the watershed, such as wetlands or other water storage. Additional contributors of load to Lake Elsinore include Canyon Lake inflows, recycled water, atmospheric deposition, and internal sediment flux, which is the largest nutrient load driver. And targets are structured into phase two milestones and phase three allocations, allowing for adaptive progress tracking. Next slide. This slide presents the results of the lake water balance models used in the TMDL revision process. The primary function of the TMDL linkage analysis is to establish a link between nutrient pollutant loading from multiple external sources and water quality in the receiving waters. The linkage analysis also serves as a key step in the use of a reference watershed approach to determine numeric targets for Lake Elsinore and Canyon Lake nutrient TMDLs. For both models, daily inflows to the lake and water quality responses were simulated dynamically. The two graphs on the bottom of this slide show time series comparisons between observed and simulated model inputs, in this case, water level during model calibration. And you can see the simulated trends match closely with what was observed. These models simulate how lake levels and nutrient dynamics respond to various loading scenarios under both current and reference watershed conditions. This analysis provides the technical basis for numeric targets, helping to align external loading with desired in-lake outcomes. The observed versus simulated curves show strong agreement building confidence in the model's ability to guide planning under future climate and land use changes. Next slide. For the revised TMDLs, the primary objective is the development of these revised numeric targets is to establish water quality conditions that are equal to or better than what would occur in the lakes if the watershed was returned to a natural reference condition. To do that, lake models are used to simulate in-lake water quality responses to a reference nutrient concentration in watershed runoff that is based on historical hydrologic patterns. In the future, the pattern of hydrology and other environmental factors will be different than historical. To account for this type of variability, cumulative distribution functions, or CDFs, are being proposed. CDFs take time series data, shown on the left, removes the consecutive order in a time series plot, and instead expresses the long-term frequency of occurrence for different levels of water quality, as shown on the right. The CDF characterizes the frequency of different in-lake water quality conditions and is a useful expression of the numeric target for in-lake response variables in the lakes. To give an example of how to read the CDF using chlorophyll A, the time series data for chlorophyll A on the left has been transformed into a long-term frequency curve shown on the right. The shaded area is when external load allocations to the lakes are achieved and in-lake water quality is equal to or better than a nutrient target CDF. If I could get one click, please. Thank you. In other words, if chlorophyll A was observed below 20 micrograms per liter 40% of the time based on historical monitoring, future water quality monitoring data sets should fall to the left of the TMDL numeric target, which is the shaded area, ensuring that the numeric target CDF has been met. As environmental patterns shift due to climate change and land use, adaptive management will be essential to uphold water quality objectives. I would also like to note that CDFs are being used elsewhere. For example, CDFs are used to express numeric targets in the Chesapeake Bay nutrient TMDLs. Next slide. This table summarizes some of the proposed revisions I just went over. One thing that has not been mentioned in detail yet is the revised TMDLs follow a phased implementation strategy. Phase one refers to implementation of the original 2004 TMDLs. Phases two and three take what we've learned about the lakes over the past 20 years, expanding on it and putting it into practice. Phase one established numeric targets based on the 25th percentile of nutrient concentrations during a monitoring period when the lakes were not significantly impacted by nutrients. This time period was considered a reference date. The revised TMDLs established numeric targets using a frequency-based target that are expressed using cumulative distribution functions, which better reflect the variability and distribution of lake conditions over time. In phase one, the linkage analysis was informed using models that have now been sunsetted. In the revised TMDLs, the linkage analysis is informed by new lake models, ensuring a stronger connection between nutrient inputs and water quality outcomes. Phase two introduces interim targets that are expected to be met within 20 years of the effective date. Phase two sets more stringent final targets, which are to be met within 30 years of the effective date. Finally, the revised TMDLs include periodic formal reconsideration every 10 years, allowing for adaptive management based on monitoring results and evolving science. Next slide. These tables here show some allocation information we went over a few slides ago, but in a more condensed format. For both Lake Elsinore and Canyon Lake, you can clearly see significant nutrient reductions will occur across all three phases of implementation. Next slide, please. A key component of the revised TMDLs is the ability to use nutrient offsets through in-lake controls. Due to the complexity of the lakes, the revised TMDLs allow the use of nutrient offsets from in-lake projects such as alum treatment or aeration to reduce nutrient loads. These offsets can help demonstrate compliance with interim milestones or final allocations and may count towards permit compliance if explicitly included in the permit. It is important to mention that any offset program must be approved by the Santa Ana Water Board or its executive officer, consistent with delegated authority. Next slide. This slide summarizes the core technical tasks prioritized for Phase 2 TMDL implementation, and I would like to highlight a few of these tasks that are already underway. If I can get one click, please. Thank you. Task 5 supports the identification of in-lake treatment options to improve water quality in Lake Elsinore. July of this year, the task force completed a study to evaluate a whole range of possible whole lake, in-lake treatment alternatives to the current aeration system to improve water quality in the long term. Task 9 is a study to define and identify minor source contributors and identify responsibility levels for TMDL implementation. Next slide. Task 11 focuses on modeling and validating the reference watershed, which underpins numeric target development. In other words, is the Cranston Guard Station the best reference watershed, or is there an alternative? While the study is not underway just yet, the results will give valuable information needed for Phase 3 to determine the appropriate final numeric targets, load allocations, and waste load allocations. Each task has a defined schedule and deliverables, allowing for phased implementation and regional board review. Next slide. Because of the complexities of the revised TMDLs, different options for compliance have been identified. TMDLs are not self-executing and must be translated into permit conditions. Phases 2 and 3 essentially have the same compliance options for meeting either interim milestones in Phase 2 or final allocations in Phase 3. These include implementing best management practices per an approved plan, and this could include participating in offsets, meeting interim numeric targets in Phase 3 and final in Phase, interim numeric targets in Phase 2 and final in Phase 3, using sector-specific milestones and allocations, using offsets and volume retention strategies to manage load reductions. This flexibility in approach encourages innovation while ensuring accountability. Next slide. At this point, you might be wondering why a total of 30-year timeline is being proposed. A 30-year timeline was selected to account for the unique hydrology and complex behavior of both Lake Elsinore and Canyon Lake. These lakes experience wide swings in water levels and nutrient dynamics due to climate variability. TMDL compliance is assessed over a 10-year running average, which smooth out short-term fluctuations from wet or dry years and provide more meaningful measures of long-term progress. Additionally, the timeline allows for adaptive management, enabling us to refine implementation strategies over time and new data emerges and environmental conditions evolve. This timeline also provides time to consider challenges permittees might face to secure funding needed for implementation of tasks. Next slide. A public comment period for the proposed TMDL revisions was held from December 26, 2024 through February 10, 2025, providing a full 45 window for stakeholder input. On January 17, 2025, an errata sheet was issued to clarify minor corrections in the draft documents, ensuring transparency and accuracy for reviewers. During the formal comment period, the Santa Ana Water Board received two formal written comment letters, one from the City of Banning and another from the Western Riverside County Agriculture Coalition, also known as RACAC. In addition to the written comments, the board received one new verbal comment at the February 14, 2025 board meeting. All comments were reviewed and addressed as part of the final proposed project to the board. Over the next few slides, I will go over the key comments received from each commenter. Next slide. The City of Banning submitted a comment letter outlining three primary concerns regarding their inclusion in the revised TMDLs. First, they indicated they were not given sufficient notice that their jurisdiction was being included in the Lake Elsinore and Canyon Lake nutrient TMDLs. Second, they pointed to mapping inaccuracies, specifically that the draft documents misrepresented the city's jurisdiction. They stated that permanent stormwater diversions and conveyance systems within a private community had not been accurately reflected. Lastly, the city expressed that its inclusion in the TMDLs may result in an environmental justice concern, potentially placing disproportionate regulatory burdens on their community without proper consultation. These comments were reviewed carefully and were considered as part of the board's response to public input and potential revisions. Next slide, please. Land use mapping in the San Jacinto River watershed was updated in July 2023 and identified that the city of Banning had about 240 acres within the Santa Ana region. After this finding, the city of Banning was notified of their inclusion in the Lake Elsinore and Canyon Lake nutrient TMDLs. Santa Ana Water Board staff recognized that the city of Banning was notified of their inclusion many years later than other responsible parties. In response to the city's comments, staff have revised the 2024 TMDLs so that the city of Banning does not currently have a waste load allocation. However, this determination is not final. Findings from Task 9 to define and identify minor source contributors and their relative contributions will help clarify the level of responsibility among responsible parties, including the city of Banning. If the findings from Task 9 show that the city of Banning contributes above the identified threshold, or if the Santa Ana Water Board concludes that assigning allocations to minor source contributors is necessary, the TMDLs will be revised accordingly. At that point, a wasteload allocation could be assigned to the city of Banning to ensure equitable and effective implementation. Next slide, please. RACAC raised three primary concerns during the public comment period. First, they challenged the use of the 25th percentile of nutrient grab sample data as the final TMDL target, arguing that this approach is overly conservative. In their view, the rationale for departing from the median lacks sufficient technical justification. Second, they questioned the validity of the San Jacinto River at Cranston Guard Station as a reference site. They argued that its hydrology and land use characteristics do not represent typical watershed conditions, making it inconsistent with EPA recommendations for selecting reference systems. Lastly, RACAC expressed concerns over financial feasibility of TMDL implementation. They emphasized that even minimal compliance costs could be unsustainable given existing project margins, particularly for agricultural operations. Next slide. Staff responded to RACAC comments stating that the selection of the 25th percentile was grounded in national guidance and input by scientific peer reviewers to provide an adequate margin of safety. Specifically, EPA's Nutrient Criteria Guidance Manual for Lakes and Reservoirs, dated 2000, recommends this approach as a protective benchmark. That said, we acknowledge the concerns raised by RACAC. The ongoing data collection under Task 11 may support development of an improved methodology to better characterize a more appropriate reference condition. To address concerns regarding implementation costs, Section 10 of the TMDL Technical Report discusses economic considerations, including potential funding sources that agricultural operators can pursue and support in Section 10.2. In addition, the revised TMDLs do not prescribe specific best management practices or BMPs. And stakeholders are free to implement the most cost-effective BMP as it fits their individual operations and circumstances. Next slide, please. Orange County Coast Keeper and Inland Empire Water Keepers representative expressed a concern that the 30-year implementation schedule is too long to ensure timely water quality improvements. They proposed a more accelerated 15-year timeline to promote earlier action and accountability. However, they did support the concept of incorporating 10-year progress reviews, which would allow for adaptive management actions and course corrections throughout the implementation period. Next slide. In response to Orange County Coastkeeper and Inland Empire Waterkeeper's timeline concerns, staff clarified that the extended implementation period is intentional. As mentioned earlier, it allows adequate time to collect data necessary, scope, and implement tasks for setting final numeric targets and allocations. In addition, the extended timeline accommodates completion of studies aimed at refining watershed reference conditions, integrating emerging science on nutrient dynamics, and addressing research tasks outlined in phase two implementation. And the 10-year check-ins provide an opportunity to track TMDL progress and consider new findings and take subsequent necessary action. Next slide. On May 16, 2025, an errata was issued that temporarily removed the City of Banning as a responsible party under the revised TMDLs, pending results from Phase 2 Implementation Task 9. Following the issue of the errata, a 45-day public comment period was opened, running through June 30, 2025. During this period, we received one formal comment letter submitted by the Lake Elsinore and Canyon Lake TMDL Task Force. Their positive feedback focused on implications of the errata and related implementation considerations. Next slide, please. This concludes our presentation on the proposed TMDL resolution. Staff recommends the board approve resolution R8-2025-0014 with the errata change sheet as presented. If you have any questions, I am happy to address them now. For additional details or follow-up, please feel free to reach out to me directly via email or phone as shown on this slide. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Excuse me, just for the record, I wanted to point out that there was another errata issued that's with your materials today, and that's the errata that's being referenced in the presentation. I also want to announce for the minutes the arrival of Board Member Clark at 9:10 a.m. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that presentation and how thorough that was. We appreciate it. Before we move to public comment and board member comment, we have a letter that's been requested to be read into the record from the City of Banning.
Jane Joy, Executive Officer. I'm reading this letter from Nathan Smith. I was unable to come today. He is the Deputy Director of Public Works for the City of Banning. Chair Murray and members of the board, the City of Banning wishes to express our gratitude in allowing us to participate in the Basin Plan Amendment for the Canyon Lake and Lake Elsinore TMDL process. The direction provided by the board to the staff and the members of the task force regarding our exclusion as a responsible party in the final Basin Plan Amendment ensures a fair and equitable solution for the City of Banning and our residents. The City of Banning continues to look forward to participating with the Task Force Subcommittee for Task 9 of the Basin Plan Amendment concerning minor sources. We have already attended meetings with this task and are committed to working with that group as those criteria are developed in consideration of jurisdictional and entities with similarly low drainage areas impact within the larger watershed. Thank you again for your consideration and allowing our participation in the discussion. I hope that I will have been able to attend the meeting to express my gratitude, but I'm currently on vacation with my family. Sincerely, City of Banning, Nathan Smith.
Thank you. Jessica, do we have any speaker cards on this item?
Yes, we have one speaker on Zoom. It'll be Pat Bolt.
Are they available at this time?
Hello.
Hello, we hear you.
All right. Good morning, my name is Pat Bolton. I will be reading a statement on behalf of Bruce Scott, who is chairman of the Western Riverside County Ag Coalition. While this process has been a multi-year massive undertaking, it is extremely difficult to celebrate the adoption of the Lake Elsinore Canyon Lake Nutrient TMDL document, a document that expedites the reduction of farming operations, which RACAC represents in the San Jacinto watershed. RACAC is a 501c3 organization, has represented ag, croplands, and dairy operators in the task force from the beginning, and has filled a major aspect of ag compliance for surface water issues. Agriculture in the San Jacinto watershed looks drastically different today than it did in 2007, with a decline in ag land use of over 55% and a continuing decline at a very, very rapid rate. Over the past 20-plus years, we've seen varying levels of understanding of agricultural needs by the regional board staff. This hindered practical implementation by RACAC because of very little to no enforcement of non-compliant stakeholders. Ag is the outlier stakeholder on the task force, with most stakeholders being MS4 entities represented by cities, counties, water districts, who are paid by taxpayer dollars, not out-of-pocket costs paid by ag operators, making it nearly impossible for many of the operators to be profitable or to continue to even exist. RACAC submitted 138 pages of comments. In most comments, the regional board responses back to us were noted or no comment. For the most part, RACAC is exhausted and just plain tired of kicking this can down the road to nowhere on a document that has many flaws and a task force that has essentially worked well for MS4s but not for agriculture. Continuing to comment and trying to positively impact this TMDL at the regional level to make it better, frankly, in our opinion, is a futile effort falling on deaf ears. Fortunately, the state of California's approval of this draft TMDL is not the final authority that requires approval. The US EPA is. RACAC intends to notify the US EPA of the many concerns it has with this draft TMDL. This TMDL sets lake water quality goals at levels that have never been sustainably achieved, and is requiring all regulated discharges to achieve discharge loading goals equal to forested areas. There is an unreasonable economic burden on less profitable agricultural cropping operations. RACAC is honored to have represented dairy and agricultural operators in the watershed for more than 20 years on the task force, and continues to work on behalf of our members in the current and increasingly challenging ag environment. Ag sustainability is placed at even greater risk due to proposed future task force compliance costs. Agriculture's ability to continue in the task force is questionable. While working with the task force subcommittee on the alternative compliance method called the minor source designation option, some on that subcommittee are still unwilling to listen to how close to the edge the less profitable farmers are, and thus there is a reduction in RACAC's ability to serve its members with a reasonable common sense approach for their regulatory compliance. Excuse me. The task force seeks its own sustainability goals and only pursues switching their administration cost burden in a manner that is disproportionately high for ag, given the remaining nutrient loading as compared to fees among other stakeholders. These efforts are being pushed without consideration of how unaffordable it is on the ag community. Their willingness to raise task force fees is very evident, but there's a blind spot regarding their inability to care about the sustainability of farm operations. RACAC will have to cut back on which parts of ag it can represent, even to the point of questioning whether RACAC can continue to exist. RACAC feels obligated to its members to move forward in assessing and finding alternative strategies for agriculture that may no longer include participation in this Lake Elsinore Canyon Lake Task Force. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. I'd now like to request any comments from the board members. Board Member Lopez.
First of all, I want to thank you for the report. You know, it's very comprehensive. I appreciate it because, you know, I served on LESWA way back in the early stages of its formation. And that's when we first started trying to work to improve the water quality in Lake Elsinore. And I think a lot has been done and really appreciate it. I drive by it, you know, so many times, and I feel that you know, it's a recreational area for everyone to enjoy. This is a great opportunity for the public to be aware of what is being done to improve the water quality. So thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Board Member Lopez. Board Member Alvarado?
I just want to say thank you for, one, reviewing all the comments and responding in a timely basis. I think it's very important for the community to know that as we do outreach and we receive those messages, they're being definitely considered. So I want to thank the staff for doing an amazing job in responding.
Board Member Clark?
No? Oh, any questions? I'll just echo the gratitude for the presentation and the information. I was speaking with Jane yesterday, and we were just talking about how the community wants to have this information. They want to know the updates. So I think, you know, it may feel elongated and very thorough, but from the comments that we've received, it's clear that the community wants this information. So just extending the gratitude as well.
And I'll go to online real quick to Board Member Rue. Do you have any comments, Bill?
No, I don't, other than I appreciate the thorough job that's been done and the fact that we have been able to work very effectively with Manning on the issue that they had.
Thank you. And Vice Chair Skindura?
Sure, I have a mechanical question and a technical question. We have the errata change sheets, so should we choose to make a motion to adopt these TMDLs, we would have to incorporate this, we'd have to include this errata sheet with that. Is that correct?
That's correct. And if I may, I just want to explain really quickly what the changes are. These are administrative typographical corrections. So attachment A to the resolution R8-2025-0014, which is before you today. Change one is to remove the date January 17th, 2025 from the caption. Change two is to remove the date January 17th, 2025 from the headers on pages 1 through 82. And the final change, which is on the back, is to remove a extra page at the end that's referencing a different document. The document is blank, but it has a header referencing an August 19th date, so that would be removed. And we do have a few copies for the public that are available here today.
Okay. And then my technical question. Big comments that came up, particularly from the Agricultural Coalition, was the use of the 25th percentile and also the Cranston station for a reference point. If I understand it correctly, there is going to be flexibility throughout this, I guess, 20-year process to revisit those levels, including the reference station. Now, if we choose to change the reference level or the reference station, could that result in tighter, different TMDLs than what we adopt today?
Yes. So we have various parts of the phase two implementation that are going to give us the information needed to determine if the final allocations for phase three are the most appropriate, and that includes a task to see if the Cranston Guard Station is even the most appropriate,
yeah,
or if there's a different watershed or reference watershed that we should be utilizing. Based off of what we know today, the 25th percentile is what EPA recommends, and it is the most appropriate. In the future, that may change based off of the data that we get through phase two implementation.
Okay, so there is flexibility throughout the process. Now, the interesting thing is we could choose to go with a percentile that's even more stringent than 25%, say 20%, or a different reference station, and that could lead to more, you know, tighter TMDLs. So
it could. I mean, the idea is we want the watershed to look in its natural state. So what would it look like if we removed all the people? And that's the goal that we're aiming for.
Okay. And so it's just I just wanted to point that out. It's because rarely have I seen standards relaxed throughout my career. So anyway, I definitely will support adopting these TMDLs. I do appreciate the comments and concerns that were raised by the Agricultural Coalition. We are sensitive to the cost that this could impose on the agricultural community. At the same time, I think what we've learned throughout this process was that the TMDLs were adopted in 2004, as tight and as stringent as they were, still resulted in the problems with fish kills, with algae blooms, and also other water quality problems. And it just had to do with the unique characteristics of these two lakes, one which, without the input, without the treated wastewater discharge into it, would be completely dry throughout most years. The other one, because it's basically two very narrow canyons, and they have a very wide watershed that drains into them. What happens is, throughout most years, very little goes into that lake. But when it rains, when we have El Nino type years, it results in huge inputs of nutrients in there. So it's clear we have to really tighten up on these standards. I also want to express my appreciation to the staff, because I had some, you know, I have to admit I was a little bit skeptical in the last meeting about the city of Banning's concerns about whether or not they were a source into this watershed. So I appreciate the fact that the staff worked with the city of Banning. They actually went out to the site, and I think there must have been some kind of divine intervention that went out up there, because it actually rained, and so they could see where exactly the runoff was going. So it's very reasonable. I do encourage the city of Banning, though, to stay involved in this process. Things can change over time, so they definitely need to be involved. I mean, new information could come up that shows that the city of Banning is a source into this watershed. So anyway, with that.
Thank you, Vice Chairman. With that, I would just like to, echo my colleagues in that I appreciate the presentation today, but also the collaborative process that led to this final recommendation that the staff's recommending today. We are sensitive to the cost concerns, but we also know we have an obligation to protect the watershed and the residents who depend upon it. So with that, unless there are no more comments from the board, Jessica, would you like, actually, I need a motion to approve.
Madam Chair, I make a motion to approve. This is Bill Rue.
Just for confirmation, is that motion with the errata sheet issued today?
Correct.
Yes.
Correct. Okay.
As presented today, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Board Member Rue. And second by Board Member Lopez. Jessica, would you please call the roll?
Lord Nender Lopez?
Aye.
Lord Nender Alvarado?
Aye.
Lord Nender Clark?
Aye.
Lord Nender Rue?
Aye.
Vice Chair Scandora?
Aye.
And Chair Nuri?
Aye. And that item passes. Thank you. I'd now like to move to item 12, a time schedule order R8-2025-0001, requiring the County of Orange to comply with requirements prescribed in general permit for stormwater discharges associated with industrial activities. The proposed adoption of tentative order, as I've just referenced, to extend time schedule order R8-2020-0029 and revise the schedule for compliance with the copper and zinc numeric effluent limitations for discharges to the Newport Bay San Diego Creek watershed from John Wayne Airport. Specific tasks are required to be completed by the discharger during the proposed extension to achieve compliance by July 25th, 2030. And so with that, I'd like to request David Rosas to present this item.
Good morning, Board Chair Murray and members of the board. My name is David Rosas, and I'm an environmental scientist in the General Stormwater Unit for the Santa Ana Water Board. Today, I'll be discussing the proposed time schedule order for John Wayne Airport. Next slide. Before I begin my presentation, I believe it's important to briefly go over what we are discussing today. I will start by going over why this proposed time schedule order is needed. Then I will be providing an overview of the industrial general permit and total maximum daily loads, or TMDLs, as it relates to the proposed order. After that, I will be describing John Wayne Airport's industrial activities and how they relate to permit and water code requirements. Lastly, after going over what a time schedule order is, I'll be identifying the most critical parts of the proposed time schedule order, as well as our recommendations to the board. Next slide. So we are here today because John Wayne Airport is an active facility with stormwater quality issue. Due to requirements set under the Water Code, John Wayne Airport has been unable to meet copper and zinc effluent requirements in their stormwater discharge. On August 5th, 2020, in order to address the zinc and copper exceedances, the Santa Ana Water Board's executive officer, under delegated authority, approved a 5-year time schedule order. On December 30th, 2024, John Wayne Airport requested an extension of the original time schedule order to meet copper and zinc effluent limits. This extension request requires the Santa Ana Regional Water Quality Control Board members' approval. Santa Ana Water Board staff have worked collaboratively with John Wayne Airport, and if approved by the board, the proposed time schedule order would require John Wayne Airport to modify their facility to meet the copper and zinc effluent limits and protect water quality. Next slide. John Wayne Airport is enrolled under the statewide stormwater industrial general permit, which is a national pollution discharge elimination system permit under the Federal Clean Water Act, and regulates stormwater discharges and authorized non-stormwater discharges from industrial facilities in California. Industrial general permit coverage is required for industrial facilities with a standard industrial classification or SIC code that is listed in Attachment A of the industrial general permit. Industrial facilities must self-report a SIC code from OSHA SIC manual that describes the facility's industrial activity. Some examples of industrial facilities listed in Attachment A are manufacturing facilities, transportation facilities, and recycling facilities. The goal is to improve water quality in the state by addressing the pollutants to stormwater discharges associated with industrial activities. These pollutants are carried to rivers, streams, lakes, and the ocean through stormwater and non-stormwater runoff, and can threaten and adversely affect human health and the environment. Next slide. In order to improve water quality, the industrial general permit requires regulated facilities to develop a facility-specific stormwater pollution prevention plan with a representative monitoring program. The facility stormwater plan documents the best management practices, or BMPs, that the facility will use on site. BMPs are practices that help reduce or prevent stormwater pollutant discharge, and a facility's BMPs can range from good housekeeping practices, such as sweeping, to installing advanced treatment systems. The BMPs the facility chooses are dependent on the facility's pollutant levels. The industrial general permit requires stormwater sampling for pollutants generated by the facility's industrial activity. Next slide. Total maximum daily loads, or TMDLs, are used to protect water quality for identified impaired water bodies. TMDLs are defined by how much of a pollutant a water body can tolerate and still meet water quality standards. The TMDL allocates allowable pollutant loads for each source, including pollutants related to industrial activity. The industrial general permit establishes numeric effluent limitations, or NELs, for facilities that discharge stormwater associated with industrial activities into water bodies that have approved TMDLs set forth in Attachment E of the Industrial General Permit and have identified waste load allocations for industrial stormwater discharges. NELs are numeric limits, an exceedance of which is a violation of the Industrial General Permit. If a facility violates the Industrial General Permit by exceeding the NEL, the facility may be subject to mandatory minimum penalties as set by California Water Code Section 13385. The NELs require dischargers to limit the concentration of pollutants in their stormwater discharge in order to protect water quality. Next slide. Now, this map looks busy and is composed of several layers depicting the overlap between total maximum daily loads, or TMDLs, and industrial facilities. This map was pulled from the online industrial stormwater general permit map tool. All the dots within the blue outlined area are industrial facilities located within our region. The red lines on the map identify the impaired rivers and streams. There are two TMDLs in our region associated with industrial stormwater discharge. I'll be focusing on the TMDL that affects John Wayne Airport. Next slide. John Wayne Airport discharges into the San Diego Creek and Newport Bay TMDL. This map shows the location of John Wayne Airport and the nearby impaired rivers and water bodies located in the TMDL. The TMDL was established by US EPA on June 14, 2002, with a compliance date for the NEL limits by July 1, 2020. John Wayne Airport's industrial activity and pollutant discharge has impacted impaired streams and water bodies within our region. The proposed order works to improve water quality in these impaired water bodies. Next slide. Here is an aerial photograph of John Wayne Airport. John Wayne Airport discharges into the Santa Ana Delhi Channel, which is a tributary of the Upper Newport Bay. Because the Santa Ana Delhi Channel is the receiving water for John Wayne Airport, the facility must comply with the numeric effluent limits for the Upper Newport Bay set by the TMDL. Next slide. The San Diego Creek and Newport Bay Toxics TMDL for Upper Newport Bay sets NELs for John Wayne Airport for copper and zinc. Historically, John Wayne Airport has exceeded the NEL for copper and zinc. This slide shows the applicable NEL pollutants and their NEL values for John Wayne Airport. Next slide. John Wayne Airport is located in Orange County and is a 118-acre commercial service airport. Roughly 89% of the facility is used for industrial activity, which can include aircraft fueling, fleet vehicle fueling, maintenance and repairs of airplanes, and airplane washing. These industrial activities are covered under the Standard Industrial Classification, or SIC code 4581, which is the SIC code for facilities primarily engaged in operating and maintaining airports and flying fields. SIC code 4581 is listed as requiring permit coverage per Attachment A to the Industrial General Permit. As required under the Industrial General Permit, John Wayne Airport has completed a pollutant source assessment, which identifies copper and zinc as being present on site, which are numeric effluent limit or NEL pollutants. Next slide. These next three slides were provided by John Wayne Airport. This map shows John Wayne Airport's stormwater drainage areas. The majority of the facility's industrial activity occurs in the surrounding areas of the airport's runway. Drainage areas determine the facility's stormwater sampling locations, and a single drainage area may have multiple sampling locations. Next slide. This map contains all the stormwater sampling locations for John Wayne Airport, each with a unique identifier. The facility currently has 14 active individual stormwater sampling locations. The facility has two qualified combined stormwater sampling locations, which combine multiple individual sampling locations within a drainage area. All active samples are used as compliance points for zinc and copper. The proposed time schedule order focuses on addressing copper and zinc pollutants by sample location. In the proposed order, a reference is given on which interim action will affect a stormwater sampling location. Next slide. The proposed order intends to reduce copper and zinc effluent limits through best management practices, or BMPs. John Wayne Airport is already implementing BMPs in each drainage area. The proposed time schedule order sets continued and improved interim BMPs throughout the facility, which include, but are not limited to, the BMP shown in this slide. John Wayne Airport uses a regenerative sweeper, which is an advanced sweeping system that uses controlled blasts of air to dislodge debris and can be considered an effective sweeping system compared to mechanical or vacuum sweepers. Additionally, the facility utilizes a variety of enhanced media filters in trenches and around storm drains throughout the site to capture stormwater pollutants. The list of filter media are filter brands that help remove stormwater pollutants from the site. John Wayne Airport has a toolbox of a variety of BMPs that it utilizes throughout the site. Next slide. A time schedule order, as authorized under Water Code Section 13385, allows dischargers an exemption to mandatory minimum penalties under Section 13385, Subdivision J3. In order to receive an exemption, the discharger is required to follow a detailed time schedule of specific actions and new or modified control measures to meet effluent limit requirements. A time schedule order requires that the proposed control measures cannot be designed, installed, and put into operation within 30 calendar days. Next slide. John Wayne Airport discharge is expected to exceed numeric effluent limits for copper and zinc, and thusly violating requirements set under the Industrial General Permit. John Wayne Airport received a time schedule order, R8-2020-0029, which was adopted on August 5th of 2020 for the copper and zinc parameters. The original TSO was approved by the executive officer and required John Wayne Airport to complete interim actions to lower copper and zinc pollutants. John Wayne Airport used the original TSO to conduct and implement BMP studies, acquired millions of dollars in funding for redevelopment, and obtained the necessary permits to implement control measures. Progress towards redevelopment was significantly delayed, primarily due to the extended FAA approval process. Although the original TSO actions were completed, John Wayne Airport was unable to meet the copper and zinc NELs. On December 30th, 2024, the facility requested an extension of their original TSO, which requires the Santa Ana Regional Water Quality Control Board members' approval. The extension request provides new interim limits and tasks that will lead John Wayne Airport into compliance with the copper and zinc NEL. We expect John Wayne Airport to meet the final NEL for copper and zinc under the proposed tentative order. The proposed tentative order would end on July 25th, 2030, and does not exceed the 10 years allowed by the Water Code. Next slide. The proposed order, which extends the original time schedule order, is necessary to allow time for John Wayne Airport to add and modify control measures at the facility. The tentative order lists interim actions John Wayne Airport must complete to meet numeric effluent limits. This slide shows a summary of the proposed order's interim actions by location at the facility. The completion dates for each area are sequential because the facility is unable to work on all airport areas at the same time. In order to continue operation, John Wayne Airport must chain interim action projects and is only able to start projects once other projects are completed. For example, ACI Jet is unable to start construction until after Clay Lacy Aviation and J Air Center's interim actions are completed. The primary interim actions proposed by John Wayne Airport to meet the copper and zinc numeric effluent limits is designing and constructing advanced stormwater treatment systems in the majority of the facility's industrial drainage areas. The facility will design and construct a minimum 6 advanced stormwater treatment systems throughout the site. Next slide. To ensure compliance, the time schedule order identifies annual interim numeric effluent limits for copper and zinc. This graph shows the interim effluent limits for copper and zinc. The interim NELs were calculated using historical data from November 2019 to present to create percentiles that set interim effluent limits. Interim NELs were chosen based on the risk of exceedance. The facility's interim NELs will become more stringent every year from the date of this hearing. The interim effluent limits for copper and zinc both start at the 95th percentile and require lower percentile limits until John Wayne Airport will be required to meet the final NEL for copper and zinc. Violation of an interim numeric effluent limit would be assessed the same as an exceedance of an NEL under the Industrial General Permit. Next slide. John Wayne Airport submitted their initial request for an extended time schedule order on December 30th, 2024. Since the official request, Santa Ana Regional Water Quality Control Board staff have worked collaboratively with John Wayne Airport over the span of several months, with the tentative time schedule order being posted for public comment on May 30th, 2025. Public comments were received on June 27th, 2025 from ACI Jet and John Wayne Airport. Both comment letters were supportive of the time schedule order. Next slide. In summary, through a collaborative effort with John Wayne Airport staff, a time schedule order has been drafted with achievable interim actions and numeric effluent limits intended to bring the facility into compliance with the industrial general permit. If approved, this time schedule order cannot be extended beyond July 25th, 2030. If the facility fails to meet interim actions or effluent limits, or they exceed the numeric effluent limits after July 25th, 2030, John Wayne Airport may be subject to mandatory minimum penalties as described in the Water Code. Santa Ana Water Board staff note the facility staff are making diligent progress toward bringing the facility's stormwater discharge into compliance with the copper and zinc numeric effluent limits. Next slide. Santa Ana Water Board staff recommends approval of the time schedule order number R8-2025-0001. Next slide. Does the board have any questions?
Jessica, if we have any speaker cards?
Yes, we have one speaker in person, Melinda Nicoy.
There we go. All right. Good morning again, Chair Murray and the board. My name is Melinda McCoy. I'm a professional geologist and senior airport manager at John Wayne Airport for environmental. I am here on behalf of the airport management, and I want to thank you for considering this time schedule order. The airport is working diligently to meet the NELs associated with the Newport Bay TMDLs. Before moving on, I want to say on behalf of John Wayne Airport, Orange County, congratulations to Executive Officer Jane Joy on her retirement. Thank you for your many years of service. And we look forward to working with incoming Executive Officer Lindbergh. So next slide. Today, I will provide an overview of the airport and a summary of our efforts over the past 5 years before moving on to cover highlights of the future plans. Next slide. So this is an overview of John Wayne Airport. You've seen it before. The airport is owned and operated by the County of Orange. The entire airport property is 510 acres. That includes parking lots, a little bit of a golf course. Just over 366 acres is actually inside the fence and considered the airfield. And about 103 acres of that is the industrial area, where industrial activities take place and the industrial stormwater permit requirements apply. The rest of the airport falls under the municipal NPDES permit with Orange County. We have over 11.5 million passengers, over 450 based aircraft that are on those pavements surrounding the airfield. We have one of the busiest runways in the nation, with over 300,000 takeoffs and landings every year. This map shows 8 distinct industrial areas that we sample and pay attention to for our industrial stormwater runoff. That includes 4 fixed-based operators, a fire station, the commercial fuel farm, our maintenance laydown yard, and the commercial ramp with all the commercial aircraft. This is not your typical industrial facility where all operations and projects are controlled by one entity. In addition, the airport is very space constrained, with virtually every foot of it is programmed for a specific purpose. Next slide. So the airport has a long history of environmental stewardship. I just want to give you a brief overview. While we were working on all this stormwater quality and working to improve our stormwater discharge, we are working on other environmental stewardship projects that are part and parcel of the way the airport does business. We are reducing emissions from mobile sources at the airport. We've achieved a fleet-wide average ground support equipment emission reduction of over 50% since 2018 through focused efforts with all our aircraft. Additionally, the airport will be receiving carbon accreditation certification this year from the Airports Council International for verified achievements in carbon reduction. The airport is currently rebuilding electric infrastructure that, and actually will be and continue that through over the next 5 years to support future electrical needs and EV charging. We're renovating our central utility plant to support those EV needs and other new electric needs, as well as adding in solar, battery, microgrid for resiliency as well as energy conservation. And we're adding treatment to our cooling tower water for water conservation. The airport manages an award-winning waste diversion and food donation program that reduces waste to the landfill as well as directing food to the food insecure in Orange County. And the airport is rebuilding and renovating over the next 5 years to Calgreen Tier 1, which is a LEED equivalent design standard throughout the airport. So the airport is serious about being a good steward and working to improve our impacts to the community. This is kind of shown in our stormwater management approach. Next slide. This is a rather busy slide, but I'm going to walk you through it. It shows the work that the airport has performed over the past 5 years working to implement this TSO. The work began with studies and evaluations to understand the nature of copper and zinc sources and the downstream water quality impairments. This was in kind of the 2020 time frame, and you see those in the kind of light brown orange color. The airport then moved to solution concept and development, and preliminary engineering studies highlighted in brown. At the same time, the airport was working to implement BMPs and identify those best BMPs to reduce copper and zinc and perhaps get us to those NELs during this time frame. But with the information we gathered, we determined we needed to move into design phase and look at advanced treatment systems. We gathered all this information, took it to, kind of developed projects. The airport Orange County Board of Supervisors approved a capital improvement program in 2023 that included all of the stormwater projects to be implemented. Also during this time frame, we were working with our fixed base operators to ensure their understanding and implementation of the requirements. A key milestone was in 2023 with the FAA approval of the airport's updated land use plan with the GA improvements on it. This FAA approval meant that the leaseholders could move forward to design completion and construction. Roughly 1 year later, Clay Lacy was able to break ground with their construction. And as I mentioned before, during this time, the airport was implementing best management practices and studies to find the most efficient and effective ways to reduce copper and zinc to the maximum extent practicable to meet those interim NELs and perhaps the final NELs. Next slide. So this slide shows the overview of BMPs that staff spoke to earlier, as well as the water quality benefits we realize from the implementation of these BMPs. The airport puts forth great effort to clean copper and zinc from our pavements and to filter it from stormwater discharges. The graph shows the distinct improvement since 2015, and particularly in the 21-22 timeframe and forward. With reducing our copper and zinc below our old value that we had to hit was the numeric action level to, working towards that numeric effluent limit. And we tickled it on a couple of years, but found we can't quite get there with some of these traditional kind of cleaning filtration BMPs. Next slide. So this is kind of a listing of all the treatment systems and all the work that will be done over the next 5 years. It's actually even in progress to a certain degree right now. These projects include a time-sensitive safety improvement to realign taxiway Alpha Delta Echo, which is just right alongside ACI Jet. We will be, well, not so much us, but the fixed base operators will be rebuilding each one of their leaseholds to include stormwater treatment. And the airport will be working on stormwater treatment, the commercial ramp, and the maintenance laydown yard, the fire station, and SNA Fuel, the commercial fueling consortium, will be doing stormwater improvement infrastructure. Now, as you can see, you know, given the high level of impact all over this airport, and the complex construction we have going on, and the necessity of continuing operations despite construction, construction of each one of these projects must be carefully phased. They cannot all be built at once to minimize operational disruptions, as well as maintain the highest standards of safety. Next slide. As mentioned before, the airport's plans are fully funded and approved by the Orange County Board of Supervisors. We have $28 million set aside for airport improvement projects alone for stormwater treatment. Next slide. And the FBOs are equally committed to meeting the water quality requirements. I wanted to give a brief overview of what this FBO improvement program was. It's a $400 million redevelopment program of the fixed-based operator leaseholds at the airport that haven't been improved since probably 50 years. In 2015, the airport initiated this concept to redevelop these FBOs. The goal is to demolish and rebuild 60 acres of pavements and 400,000 square feet of buildings and hangars. They will be rebuilding to Envision Gold and LEED equivalent design standards. They will be meeting the industrial permit discharge requirements at their leasehold boundary. It was 5 years from concept to lease award, and it's been 4 years from that time to construction groundbreaking. We went through design, NEPA, and an extended FAA approval process, and then finally Orange County permitting. We are now moving into the phase construction, which mentioned before, for safety, operations, and FAA compliance. Next slide. In closing, the airport is grateful for the efforts of the regional board staff working with us to ensure the necessary construction improvements can be implemented in a safe manner so that the final TMDL NDL can be met. And we urge approval by this board. I'm available for questions. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your presentation. With that, I'd like to open it up to our board members. I see Board Member Lopez has a question.
I have a couple questions. This report, did staff have an opportunity to see it before you presented it to us?
This right now, yes.
Did you get an opportunity to see it? There's nothing in there that would conflict or modify or in any way change the recommendation that is before us before?
No. The John Wayne Airport is required under the current TSO to submit annual reports, which is similar to the PowerPoint in terms of updates.
The question legal counsel, it would be appropriate based on what we had to proceed with the action item?
Yes, so the recommendation would be on the presentation that staff presented, not necessarily. That's just a comment. That presentation was a sort of a public comment. So the presentation, the recommendation is based on what's before you in your materials today and the presentation that staff gave.
Okay. Board Member Alvarado?
I just want to say thank you for, you know, one, the explanation, but also want to thank the John Wayne Airport staff and, of course, the Board of Supervisors for working with us. I think it's very important. We are extending, as we take this decision to extend, it's because we want to continue to collaborate. I live in the city of Santa Ana, and so John Wayne is in my city, and I think it's very important for us to work together in order to keep our water quality at its best.
Absolutely. And
all those numbers, and thank you for sharing all that information. I think it's important for all of us to continue acknowledging that we are partners and that we want to work together as we service our communities. Thank you.
Thank you. Board Member Clark.
Thank you, Madam Chair. From both presentations, it appears to me that everyone is working diligently to try to work together and get to a solution. And I can understand and appreciate the staggered timeline, because I know a lot of us fly out of John Wayne. It makes sense that they probably can't make all those improvements at the same time, simultaneously. I did have a question, though, about before we get to that 2028, 2029, 2030 deadline, can you just remind me of what the check-in points are? Will there be, it's just annually, or can you just reiterate what that process looks like?
Yes, there are current annual reports that they have to submit to state their progress, but the interim actions must be completed. Some of them must be completed throughout the TSO, and we'll assess those, as well as the interim effluent limits go down every year, and we assess those annually as well.
So when those certain time points are supposed to be completed, are there specific dates for those, or?
They are required based off of the reporting year, which is June 30th and July 1st.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I'll move to Board Member Rue online.
No, I don't. I just appreciate what we're doing and the fact that we're working with the airport and the entities within the airport to not only find compliance, but to find a way to move forward so that we don't impact the traffic at one of the busiest airports in the nation.
Thank you. Vice Chair Skinder.
Sure. I had a question. So I noticed in the last presentation, there's the slide showing the roadmap to compliance. And of course, it's the very tortuous path that's shown here. And it looks like back in 2020, 2021, probably 2022, they did a lot of source evaluation trying to figure out where the zinc and copper is coming from. What kind of sources did they identify?
You know, we looked at various, you know, kind of sampled all over the airport, took rainwater samples, took samples from various areas, and as best we can tell, tires, brakes, exhaust. It is all over the airport.
Yeah.
So we have freeways on either side, we have traffic within the airport, we have aircraft. So we have copper and zinc on our industrial areas from that, as a result of that.
I see. So it wasn't coming from like the aircraft washing facilities, the fuel farms, or anything like that.
And we could not find any distinct differences based on that.
Yeah. So I realized, because you know, trying to get all the airlines to change out their brake pads to lower copper, that would be a major challenge.
That's a challenge we could not overcome. We're one airport out of, you know, hundreds and hundreds.
You can't do that. If there was some kind of, you know, if there's a way to be able to substitute products, you know, but it doesn't look like it's the situation here. So it's going to be an ambitious program in putting on all these measures and controls, especially trying to achieve some very, very tight standards, which they definitely need to be, because as you all know, Upper and lower Newport bays are impaired by copper.
Absolutely. So. And those are very small numbers that we're trying to hit.
Okay.
Thank you, Vice Chair Scandura. I'd just like to thank the county for working so collaboratively with our our own agency, but also the incredible investment that's being made in sustainability across the board, as was highlighted in your presentation, and for staff's work throughout as well. So with that, I don't think we have any other public comments. So Jessica, I would first like to request a motion to approve.
Madam Chair, I'd like to make a motion for the item as presented this morning.
I'll second.
All right. Moved by Board Member Ruth, seconded by Board Member Clark. Jessica, would you please call the roll?
Bortnender Lopez?
Aye.
Bortnender Alvarado?
Aye.
Bortnender Clark?
Aye.
Bortnender Ruth?
Aye.
Vice Chair Scandora?
Aye.
Chair Nuri?
Aye. And that item passes. Thank you so much. We're now
going to move. Madam Chair, this is Director Ruth. I will need to leave the meeting due to another conflict.
Okay, well, we wish you well, and thank you for staying through all the action items.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll have everybody have a wonderful summer.
Thank you. We'll see you soon. All right, we'll move on to item three, and I'm pleased to share that we have our State Water Resources Control Board Vice Chair, Didi Diamo, who's with us, and we'll provide an update from the State Water Resources Control Board.
Good morning, Chair Murray and members of the board. I'll start off with some of the work, the ongoing work with the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. Definitely progress for some of the basins that were referred to the State Water Board from the Department of Water Resources. On June 3rd, our board approved a resolution to return the Chowchilla Subbasin. The Chowchilla Subbasin is in the San Joaquin Valley, and the subbasin had been working on an updated plan from what they had submitted to the Department of Water Resources, and really making an effort to see if that would show their path to sustainability. And so to do that, and we Didi, gladly, Department of Water Resources. This decision ends the prospect of any. Go ahead.
Yeah, we're having an issue hearing you. I don't know whose end it's on.
Okay.
There's nothing we can do.
I'll just testing. Is that better?
Yeah, that is. Thank you.
Okay. I'll just get a little closer to my computer. That's better.
Yeah, it's a little choppy, but we'll manage. Thank you.
Let's try this. Maybe if I go off screen, is that better?
Yes, that's
better. Can you
better.
Hear me now?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, great. So anyway, well, I'll start over then on the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. On June 3rd, our board adopted a resolution to return the Chowchilla Subbasin to the Department of Water Resources jurisdiction. We did that because the basin, since having been referred to us from the Department of Water Resources last year, the basin did update their plan, and staff's assessment and our assessment was that they were able to show a pathway to sustainability consistent with the requirements of the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. So this decision ends the prospect of any direct state intervention in the subbasin's management. And we're just really pleased with the progress in the basin. And I think that it also shows that our board really isn't interested in taking over management. We only do so where we find a need that the plan does not show a path of sustainability. Many of these basins that have been approved by the Department of Water Resources, they're now working on their next round of achieving milestones. And so there is a possibility that basins could come back to us, even if they initially maybe, you know, passed the green light from the Department of Water Resources, in that their plans showed a pathway to sustainability. But now, you know, the rubber meets the road, so to speak, and it's important that the sub-basins start now to achieve the milestones that they've laid out in these plans. Shifting gears to water measurement and reporting, we have been engaged, our staff has been engaged in an effort to update our measurement and reporting regulations. This is really important for surface water diversions to make sure that we have the correct information, especially in dry years where there may be a potential for us to have to implement curtailments, you know, in other words, cutting off surface water diversions. So it's important that we be able to rely on accurate reporting and measurement. And so this regulation was adopted in 2015 as a result of the drought in the 2014-2015. And we have found a need to update the regulation, make it a little more user-friendly, make sure that we have everything through electronic reporting that will fit in nicely with our water rights modernization database that we are working on. The Division of Water Rights released a proposal, a second round of revisions on May 22nd. Public comment closed on June 6th, and staff is in the process of making some additional minor revisions that will also be available to public comment. We expect that we'll be adopting this regulation update in October. And then at our most recent board meeting, we really focused quite a bit on drinking water and wastewater systems. We had a workshop on July 15th for our Clean Water State Revolving Fund Intended Use Plan. The plan was released on May 31st, and comments are due July 28th, and we expect to have an August 5th adoption. We also heard from our contractor for the wastewater needs assessment at our July 15th board meeting as an information item update on the completion of phase one. So we heard from our staff and also our contractor, which is UCLA's Liskin Center for Innovations. As a reminder, the purpose of the needs assessment is so that we can be in a better position to be able to evaluate challenges that are related to wastewater sanitation and infrastructure. This project was launched in 2023. We've just completed phase one, and the completion date of phase two is expected to be 2027. So we heard detailed information on phase one, which essentially is a review and survey of the information so that we can identify available and missing sanitation system data. Also to establish a sanitation system risk and inadequacy criteria, and also to evaluate methods for assessing groundwater impacts, potential solutions, and associated costs for systems of concern. Phase two, in consultation with with ongoing consultation with our board and the Wastewater Needs Assessment Advisory Group, they will be developing the final risk assessment results, including identification of systems of concerns and their associated modeled solutions. Evaluating also, you know, I know this is something we're all very concerned about, and that is affordability and potential and funding sources and gaps that exist, and providing our board with a roadmap really for ongoing implementation of these solutions that will be identified. As we speak, you know, right now this morning, the Wastewater Needs Assessment Advisory Group is holding its quarterly meeting, and they've been, you know, really helpful in this process and ongoing engagement with the contractor. Also on wastewater, we adopted for the first time a sewer system administrator appointment for the East Orosi Community Services District, which is in the San Joaquin Valley. This was done on June 11th, and identification of the district as a designated sewer system in need of an administrator. So that official designation needed to occur, and then before we could actually appoint a administrator. And the administrator is the Tulare County Resources Management Agency as a full scope administrator for the East Orosi Community Services District. And then we're moving forward on a funding agreement with the administrator to execute funding for the project through our Division of Financial Assistance. Moving on, fee stakeholder meetings. Staff will be holding the final round of stakeholder meetings to discuss the fiscal year 2025-26 fees. And that meeting for water quality, water rights is on July 31st. And then August 1st, drinking water and the environmental lab accreditation program. Just an update on the administrative hearings office, the Delta Conveyance Project. On June 20th, our administrative hearing office released an amended hearing notice, and the evidentiary portion of the hearing will resume on August 12th and will continue into August, September, and October, again, via Zoom. Also, if you want to track these hearings, there's a YouTube link that's noted on our website. And that's all I have to say, and just want to extend my heartfelt congratulations to Executive Officer Jane Joy in her retirement. It's been a real pleasure to work with you, Ms. Joy, and then also congratulations on the transition over to Eric Lindbergh. I look forward to working with you. That's all I have. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you so much. So I will start with any board member comments. Anyone from the board? Not seeing anyone. So Dee Dee, we just want to thank you again for a very thorough report and for bearing with us on the agenda organization today, or reorganization, but thank you. Hope you have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you. You too.
All right, with that, we'll move on to item four, which is an update on our racial equity report.
Great. I just have a quick update and a quick PowerPoint. I'm going to do it from up here if that's acceptable. Yeah. So back in 2024, we adopted the racial equity resolution, and followed by a racial equity action plan, which was actually, we talked about it in July of 2024 last year. So next slide. And so this slide will be familiar. We have these four strategic objectives that we've identified, and actually they mirror what the State Board is also doing. These objectives, as I've said before, build upon each other to help us to walk the path so that racial equity and inclusion becomes a integrated part of our practice. And with the action plan is designed to address each one of these objectives and to determine and to get us moving in that approach. So I'll go through each one separately and give you a status report on our action plan. Next slide. So the way the slides are set up is this is our strategic objective one. There's these little annotations of where we are with these items. With the two arrows, that means it's an ongoing. It's something that we just continue to do. If there's a checkbox, it means it's completed. If there's a clock with some values in it, that's how far along we are with each item. And so for strategic objective one, we continue to have a racial equity team that meets to help move the forward, to mentor staff, mentor new staff on how we want to do our public outreach in those actions. We continue to be aligned with the State Water Board view or policies towards racial equity, which has not changed. I'll just, and still is remaining one of the major areas of improvement that we want to do within our organization. And then we also continue to have internal and external discussions. What we've completed is there is a racial equity toolkit. We have one at the state board level as well as internally. Our site cleanup programs and our UST programs, we are looking at the data accessibility related to those sites. A lot of site cleanup is industrial areas, and a lot of the lower income areas are industrial areas. So there is a clear nexus there. So we continue to look at that. We do have a public outreach. We call it best management practices. It's a document that our staff has created based on what they've learned on how to effectively outreach, and it will be adjusted as we grow and we learn. So that's in place. It was designed to comply with AB 2108, but it really is inclusive of what the action plan is moving towards. And then about 50%, I would say, we are looking at incorporating racial equity into our integrated report. And again, this is a report that's done every 2 years. And so the integrated report identifies impaired water bodies. So where are these locations of lower income areas or tribes in relationship to our impaired water bodies? In our action plan, we said we wouldn't complete it till 2026 because that's the next cycle for us to look within our region. So that's on track. The last item is climate change. We still haven't really gotten started with climate change impacts. However, SAPA has received a very large grant, and Jeff Moser discussed it at two meetings ago. It's the I'm going to get it right. Climate Adaptation and Resiliency Plan, or CARP. But what it will do is it's going to look at how climate change is going to be addressed within our region and what do we expect. And there is an element that looks at where is that related to some of the underserved areas and some of our tribes. And so we're Eric's going to be on the technical advisory committee for that. We will be involved in that process, and it will help us to understand climate change and where it sits. Okay, next slide. And similarly, this is the strategic objective 2. This is where we're looking at being inclusive and understanding our community, both internally and externally. All of our human resources activities have been, we've incorporated racial equity into our questions. We're looking at it as we move forward. The state has developed a workforce diversity inclusion program, and we follow that completely. I feel it's incorporated, but as we hire and bring in new, we continue to use that. We do have a language tool. These things have been completed. We have a language tool that's available to us to help us translate any public outreach documents that we have, and we use that tool. It works very well. And then also, I need to change my sheet. Sorry. As I mentioned, there is a recruitment workforce procedures that we've received from State Board that we have incorporated. And lastly, we have a mentoring program. It's a little bit more ad hoc within the organization. It's not really written down, but it does occur, and it occurs quite often. We've had quite a bit of turnover of staff, and so we do make sure that our staff is mentored. I put it at 50% because it's not like written down, but it does occur. And then the last one is support staff participation efforts. This, I think, in our action plan, we put it as later, but what this really is identified is like an affinity group. So if our staff wanted to have a group with a specific area of focus, we would definitely support it, and I would support it today. We just haven't had any requests yet, but I do think that could come along. State Board has several programs that they have that we can be involved with as well, but it would be a program that we would be very supportive of. We haven't touched that yet. We're still growing. Next slide. And this is the strategic objective three. This is probably the more, the state where we've developed community connections and we're actually working in a relationship with them and collaborating with them, and we're just starting. So some of the things that we currently do is we do our CEQA review. We're looking for opportunities there. As I said, any public outreach document, we're making sure that it is in the proper language and in the proper location. We are actually going to events instead of having people have to find us. We're going to their events. And then we do have quite a few findings that we place in our permits of the activities that we've taken to make sure that we're sharing what our activities are. This still has to mature. Again, we're taking actions and learning. Identification of external partners. We have a few. We've done quite a bit of outreach to tribes. We're not getting response back yet, except for two or three tribes, but we'll continue that effort. We have a few partners in septic to sewer that I've mentioned before. But again, this has to continue to develop. It's just in its infancy. Then the last item are areas, again, that we still need to touch on. The community capacity funds, these would be funds that we would have. We could hire a consultant to help us do outreach or to help us work with a community where maybe they've already built trust or have an experience with them. So we will look to seek those opportunities. There isn't funding right now, but it will come. I believe it will come. And then lastly, our climate change and how it relates to these communities still is in development. So once we identify what they are, we can begin to prioritize them. Then the last slide, and this is kind of the ultimate goal, where we need to have a sustainable approach. And it's happening, and I know Eric's on board with it, but it's happening and it's moving forward. Our staff, I've seen a cultural change. Every project that comes through, they're looking at how it relates to making sure we're inclusive and we're talking with our communities. Can we do a better job? Of course. Yes, we can do that. So this is the ultimate goal. I am so proud of this program and where it's come. I'm looking forward to see where we can take it. So that's that, and that's my report.
Thank you so much, Jane. I'd like to open it up to the board now. Any board member comments? Board Member Lopez, did you have a comment? No? Okay. Board Member Clark?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jane, you should be very proud of all the work that's gone into this, and hopefully after your retirement, this is something that you can look toward as being part of your legacy, that it's continued. So that's my hope for you, for sure. So many good things. I recently had a discussion with the governor's staff as part of my reappointment process, and they asked about the racial equity resolution, but they really wanted to know, how is it being put into action? And I was like, well, great that you asked, because there's all these things that have been done. And they were so really impressed to hear, especially the integration part, which I think you've done a beautiful job in making sure that it's not this separate document that, and I mean, even with the name, some folks could maybe look at it and say, well, I don't want to know about that information, but integrating it into other reports, into other practices, ensures that the action items will be carried out, because, as you mentioned, it's just becoming part of the culture versus this separate initiative or project, which is just so great. I just had a question about the mentoring program. It sounds great. Are there plans to maybe articulate it in writing at some point?
So what we've seen so far, and this is kind of an area that this is an area that's near and dear to my heart, mm-hmm. always has been, even if related to just mentoring new leaders. But the State Board has some guidance on mentoring that has been kind of in my to-do list in the future that I think that we need to take and incorporate. But we also have set up quite a few opportunities where we can talk across our sections. So we have section talks that where, you know, if we have something that's interesting, everybody's interested in cannabis. That's the main. It's one of the areas that just keeps, it just keeps giving, people are interested. So just for example, Brian would come in and give a section talk on cannabis to all staff, and everybody's there. We have it on a day when most people are in the office, so we can do it face to face, and it gives an opportunity for people to learn new things. Related to racial equity, we've been talking about it in our general staff meeting, but it needs to go further. So yes, I do think that we just need to be more intentional about what we do. I think it's, right now it's just kind of a natural thing. When you have new staff, you want to tell them what we're doing. But we also have a group that meets on 2108. It was set up by Michael Jones, and they just talk about public outreach and what's working and what's not. They produce this document with procedures and practices. Mm-hmm. So those, I don't know if I call that mentoring, but it does occur. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we need to be more intentional about it.
Sounds like it's happening organically.
It is, but it needs to be more intentional. And I'll ask Eric to do that. You can ask Eric.
Yes, I love that. And then just one final inquiry about the affinity groups. I know those can kind of happen organically sometimes, but if there is funding at some point, even if it's like $50 to go towards snacks or donuts or something like that to help people come together. Yeah. I've seen that work at my place of business, that sometimes people are a little hesitant to have to take on the work of assembling the affinity group, but if there are some resources put behind it to encourage the collaboration, that sometimes helps nudge the groups to get started. Yeah. So, but I love that you guys are thinking about that.
Yeah, great idea. Yeah,
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Board Member Lopez.
My question is, so the public is aware of what's going on, are these goals and objectives, as they are accomplished, are they updated into that link?
On the website, we haven't done that yet, but we could. The action plan is on the website. It's available. I just for this meeting, I went through it and looked at it. And we've hit everything, so I don't see a need for us to update that action plan, but we could provide some status report. We could do that. That wouldn't be difficult to do at all.
Okay.
But it's a great idea, too. But we can put that on our list, yes.
I like that idea.
I do, too.
Anyone else? Okay. Well, thank you. This is exciting, and we're really thrilled. I really want to underscore the integration. And in the next phase, as the maturation of this program moves forward, the intentional aspects of it, that we are as proactive as we can within, I know, very difficult budget constraints, but where we can. I'm sadly not too surprised that there hasn't been a tidal wave of response yet, because, you know, it's been generational that we haven't had this kind of proactive and purposeful outreach to a lot of our communities. But as they see the sustained aspects of this program and as it grows, hopefully the trust will be there and we'll see more engagement.
That's the hope.
Yeah,
kind of get to know us, just like what relationships start, right? Get to know who we are and build some trust.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, thank you so much. Now we'll move on to item 13, which is your last executive officer's report, which is going to make me tear up.
Well, I'll just say I was going to do some items, but you know, I just want to say thank you to the board. This position is, you know, it's kind of the end of my career, but it has been it's been challenging, which I love challenges. I don't mind hard work and I don't mind challenges. I have learned and grown so much within myself, in my skills and leadership and understanding how to work. And I'm so thankful for that. And your leadership that you've provided to me is invaluable. The perspectives that you all bring and have taught me, I just treasure, because I feel like it's made me more rounded in understanding. You know, when you're an engineer, you kind of like this. You know, you get kind of isolated, and I don't want to be that way. I want to be more open and broad to more ideas, and you guys have all really helped me do that. But what a joy, what a great career this has been. And I think it's time for the baby boomers to move on, so I'm a baby boomer moving on. it's been great. It's been a really great time. Great time of learning. Thank you so much. Appreciate all your support. Couldn't have done any of this without your support and encouragement. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane. And I'm going to move into board member reports because I know everybody wants to speak. So I'll go all the way to my far right, and that is board member Lopez.
Well, first of all, I want to express my appreciation for your leadership, but only to add the guidance that you provided me as a new board member. You know, I think it was tremendous. I really appreciate that. It has a a relationship that, it brings me into the agency to understand what's going on, so I really appreciate that, and I wish you the best of luck. To that end, I would like, if the legal counsel would approve, I would like to suggest or to adjourn this meeting in Jane's behalf in some wording that would be appropriate, by the our board president to adjourn the meeting in her behalf. And I would offer that motion at the time that it's appropriate to do that. So, thank you.
Board Member Alvarado is writing down the minutes.
Thank you. Again, I'm just going to echo all the comments and say thank you. Thank you for your leadership, for your support, your guidance. And I specifically had the opportunity to attend a couple of meetings out there where we put in practice the racial equity, when we provided translation, when we were able to make our voices heard throughout our communities. And I want to thank you, because that leadership just definitely is going to transform not only the water boards in California, but throughout. Remembering that water is life, it is important for the communities out there to understand that we are part of that fight and that we are here to make sure that, our voices are heard. So I want to thank you for that leadership. And I want to congratulate you and wish you nothing but the best. Enjoy, have fun. This is the time to do it. Thank you for your leadership and for all the work that you have put together. And I know that your name will be remembered in several conversations as we move forward and as your legacy continues throughout the work that we're doing. And also, welcome, Eric. congratulations on your appointment, and also thank you for continuing the leadership. Thanks.
Thank you. Board Member Clark?
Yes, thank you. Jane, I have thoroughly enjoyed working with you and really have enjoyed seeing just the evolution of your leadership throughout the years. I really think, and I think maybe I'm thinking because I just finished another degree, but thinking you could be a case study for leadership, really, because it's such a great example of, a different type of leadership. I feel like you were authentic the entire time you served, but it's with this calm strength, this kind of quiet boldness that you exuded throughout your time here that is really admirable and really made it just so easy to work with you and created a really wonderful sense of stability, I think, for us as board members, but I'm sure for the staff as well. And Eric being selected demonstrates that you have done your due diligence in empowering and uplifting staff within, which speaks a lot to what goes on behind the scenes. So we're just full of gratitude and thank you for your service. This really is a public service role. And so I'm I have no words other than appreciation, but I'm going to look into figuring out how we can get you in a case study somewhere. Thank you so much.
Vice Chair Skendora.
Okay, well, certainly we're going to have our opportunity at the next meeting to honor Jane. But it's certainly been a great pleasure working with Jane. And one thing I'll note is that I have a long career, but I've had a chance to work with three of the four executive officers over the past 4 years. I did not get a chance to work with Hope Smythe. She had become executive officer just as I was retiring from DTSC, and then she herself retired just before I was appointed. But she was definitely a very outstanding person, and so I offer my congratulations to Eric for being the next executive officer, and I have full confidence that he's going to be continuing the fine work of his four predecessors.
Thank you, and I just want to really, for everyone listening and for everyone in our region, express gratitude as well. This position is not easy. Eric's got big shoes to fill, and I know he's prepared. But Jane, what you've provided to our region, to the support of the board, to the staff, but also to the region as a whole, they know they had an advocate and an accessible EO, executive officer, with your leadership, and that's extraordinary, and it's not as common as you might hope or think that it exists. It's quality leadership doesn't happen by accident. It takes purposeful, compassionate action every day, and you provided that to all of us. So just want to say thank you for that. And the culture that you've created here, we do want to continue, which is why I know for myself and my colleagues, Eric was such a natural fit and a perfect choice to come in your stead. But just want to wish you the very best with you and your family, and great health and happiness in your retirement. It's so well deserved. And I know we're going to honor you some more going forward, but thank you for everything you've done for all of us in this region.
Thank you. I'm just overwhelmed. That's all I can say. Thank you.
So with that, on that happy note, our next meeting is on September 12th.
Wait.
And we'll be meeting at my
motion to adjourn the meeting.
Yes. I was going to get to adjourning, but yes. So our next meeting is September 12th at the Orange County Sanitation District. It's a beautiful new facility in Fountain Valley. And with that, I'd like to request that we honor honor Jane Joy by adjourning the meeting in her name tonight.
That'd be today. My motion would be to adjourn the meeting.
Yes. And so with that, thank you, Board Member Lopez. I think it's a unanimous agreement that we do that, so we'll adjourn in honor of Jane Joy. Thank you so much.
Can we take a vote on that motion?
Sure, we could take a motion. We could take a roll call.
How about by acclamation?
Isn't that necessary?
Yeah.
Well, I was going to do a clarification. Oh. Typically, we adjourn meetings in honor of people who have died, so we got to make sure.
Right? I'm still alive.
Jane is alive.
I've seen it, Beau. She's alive and well, and will remain that way. Yes. All right, everyone. God bless you all, and thanks for being here. And wish everyone a wonderful weekend too.